This morning's scripture is from Ecclesiastes 3, chapter 3, verses 1 through 8. There is a time for everything, and a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace.
I was instructed to give equal time to the majority party and the minority party. So I'll try to make sure that I do a swivel here from time to time. This is one of the few times, perhaps, when you have had both a singing version and a reading version of the text for today, which, as you know now, is from the Old Testament unusual, unique book of Ecclesiastes. I want to talk just for a moment about two words that are used in Ecclesiastes in a particular way, and then get into this business of expiration dates and seasons. Frequently, the writer of Ecclesiastes talks about things that he observes happening under the sun. That's just an old-fashioned Jewish way of saying it happens in this world right now. It's in Gratiot County on September the 6th, 2015, in this church, or in your neighborhood, or in your workplace, or in your family. There's no speculation. We're not thinking about what might happen next week. The wisest man in the entire Old Testament, Solomon, says, after my long lifetime, I want to explain to you in a descriptive fashion the way things are. We moderns have kind of dumbed that down. We have the phrase, it is what it is. But there's some truth to that. Solomon is saying it is what it is. Secondly, he talks about seasons. And that's what I want to dwell on today, because a season means an appropriate time. For example, we have a hunting season. Depending on what it is that you're hunting, there's a time that's the first day of the season, and there's a time that's the last day of the season, and the only appropriate season is the time in between, and the day comes when the season's over. And there's a word for people who operate after that. They're called poachers. We live in Gratiot County, which is an agricultural county. And we know that there's a season that God has ordained for growing and a season for harvesting. If you go to the farm market here in Alma on Wednesday and on Saturday, we are now in the time of harvest. Nobody in his right mind is going to plant tomatoes tomorrow. The season, or begonias. If you don't like tomatoes, you can plant begonias, whatever they are. There's an appropriate time. God set it up that way. And even if you try to do something out of season, it doesn't matter if you're a nice person or even if you're a needy person, it just isn't going to happen. I can say, you know, I forgot to plant tomatoes, but I'd like to raise a bunch of them and give them to the poor, so if I plant them tomorrow, maybe God will bless it. Not going to happen. We've been told a long time ago that there are seasons for everything. I want to deal with some of the seasons that the author of Ecclesiastes has to say that aren't quite as obvious, because they have to do with human relationships. And that was sung to you and also was read to you just a moment ago. And I'm going to try to put them in order so that as I move along, they get closer and closer to what we would probably deem the most important one. First of all, there's a season that has to do with our personal health. Let me give you an example. I go into my doctor for my annual checkup. And I come into the examination room, and he looks up and he said, "What happened to you?" I said, "I know, that's why I'm here." So he begins to examine, and he puts me through all the tests and on all the rest of that. And when he's finished, he says, "Sit down, I'm going to write you a prescription, but it's not something you can take to the pharmacy. It's a prescription for you to change your behavior because it's a season for you to do that. We're going to start with diet. I'm going to give you a diet, and we're going to cut down on the sodium. We're going to cut down on the sugar. We're going to put a little bit more fiber in there, a whole lot less fat and less carbs," and the deal goes on and on. "In addition to that," he says, "I want you to get 7 hours of consecutive sleep at night. No more staying up till 1 a.m. watching Gilligan Island reruns. And I want you to 4 times at least during the week to get 1 hour of aerobic exercise. And the last thing I'm going to tell you is this. I want you, when you check out at the desk, to make an appointment to see me exactly 6 months from today." So I go, and I make my appointment, and I leave the doctor's office, and I am filled with good expectations. We know what road is paved with good expectations, don't we? And I say to myself, I'm going to turn over a new leaf. If you ask Carol, she will tell you I've turned over enough new leaves to deforest an entire woods. I get in the car, and I start driving down Wright Avenue. And it's a hot day, and I've got the windows down. And as I go past KFC, the aroma of chicken comes wafting into my vehicle. If anything is going to waft into my vehicle, I'd like it to be the aroma of chicken. And I think, you know, if I'm going to embark on this six-month adventure where it's going to be drastically changing the lifestyle, maybe I should go in and have the buffet one more time. I'll get it out of my system. You never notice how you can lie to yourself. I just said I'm going to get it out of my system when my plan is to put it in my system. And so I do that because I know, intellectually at least, that there's no difference between 6 months and 5 months and 29 days. I still haven't hit the expiration point. As I'm driving down the road, it occurs to me that last week I read in an article that if you're going to go on a diet, you should always start on a Monday. That seems like wisdom to me. And I think this is Thursday, so Friday could be Taco Bell, Saturday could be Pizza Hut, and Sunday, right across the street from the church is Mancino. It's almost as if God ordained it. You see where I'm going with this? Those of you who are laughing are perhaps thinking, yeah, I know, I've been there. I can get away with that for a little while, but if I continue that, I'm going to go past the expiration point where no matter what I do when I go back to see the doctor, I will have wasted the season. Because I guarantee you, I can't wait till the last week and then go out and run a half marathon every day and fast. It doesn't work like that. Even if I'm sincere, even if I pray about it, that's not going to happen. Seasons have to do with learning. When I was an undergraduate in college, I had a professor, a really good guy. He was a guy with a German background. He had a very distinct German accent, a middle-aged guy, bald and kind of stocky and a little sarcastic, which was why I really liked him. And about 3 times a semester, he would give us exams in class. And he would stand at the first row, and back in those days, they made exams, a mimeograph. Some of you old-timers know about that. In high school, kids would sniff them, thinking that the mimeograph would make them happy or whatever. And he'd start thumbing through to put them down the row, and he'd look back in rows 2, 3, 4, and 5, they were students who were still thumbing through their pages or looking for one last word in the glossary. And he would say in that delightful accent, "What you learn now will not save you." The season for learning had long since passed. This was a season for testing. So when the author of Ecclesiastes is talking about seasons, he's saying, really, there's more than just agricultural seasons. There's seasons in everything that we do. And the reason why it's important for us to understand that is when the season passes, we have irretrievably lost something that's important. I'll give you another example. I noticed when I'm sitting in the pews here that there are a number of couples in the church who've got little children. Maybe they're babes in arms, or maybe they're little toddlers, or some of the ones who are up here. Educators and scientists will all tell you that the optimum time for learning is from the time that a child is born to about the age of 6 or 7. That doesn't mean that they don't learn after that. Doesn't mean that you can't teach them. But there's a reason why the proverb says, train up a child in the way he should go, because good luck trying to train up a teenager in the way that they should go. And so you can put in all of the things about character and all of the rest of it, but the day comes when they go off to school and they begin hearing other voices. And they used to believe that all wisdom came from mom and dad, and now they understand that there's other ways to view things. And they see teachers, and they have coaches, and maybe celebrities, and they begin hearing the other voices. It doesn't mean that there still can't be influence. It just means that the season has passed. Let's move up to something that sounds a little more spiritual, a little more grown up. When Jesus was preaching the Sermon on the Mount, he gave some advice that I consider to be secular advice, but extremely sound. Let me read it to you. Jesus says, this is the 5th chapter now of Matthew, verse 25. He says, settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Do it while you're still with him on the way, or he may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you'll be thrown in prison, and you won't get out till you pay every last penny. We have got that phrase today, don't we? It says, settle out of court. What he's saying is there is a time in human relations when there's still some flexibility, when people's positions haven't hardened so much that no one's going to back down. And if you make a compromise, I think it's terrible the way in so many cases the word compromise has turned out to be a dirty word. There's nothing wrong with compromise unless you're talking about real, real spiritual issues. Compromises keep marriages together. They keep churches on the straight and narrow. Compromises make neighborhoods safe. Compromises in the workplace. And Jesus is saying there is a season when you can resolve something while it's still a small issue. But if you don't, if you decide to ignore this seasonal business and you get caught up in the machinery of the courts and the judge is now dealing with it, it's out of your hands. Sides have solidified. Don't we see that in many places in society today? It's either for or against, as though there's nothing in between. Well, there's a few times when that may be true, but there are many more times when people of goodwill, if they simply would settle earlier when they haven't hunkered down, so to speak, a lot of grief could have been spared. In the same chapter, Jesus goes on and he begins talking about that was just simply human relations. He starts talking about spiritual relations. And he says something like this. I'm going to paraphrase it. He says, suppose that you were in church, although he would have said temple, but he means the same thing. And you're in the part of the church where you take care of spiritual business. That would be the sanctuary. You're not having coffee over in his place, and you're not visiting out in the narthex, but you're in here, and maybe even down at the altar. And he says, suppose that you are giving your sacrifice. We'd call it tithes and offerings. Or suppose that you are praying to God. Or suppose that you're singing praises to God. And in the middle of that, it comes to you that your brother has got something against you. Did you know that Jesus is actually saying there's a time when it's inappropriate to keep on praying? Because he says, get up from the altar. Stop that important business that you're taking care of. There's a season and you want to deal with the season while you still can, and go to your brother and make it right, or your sister. And then come back and take care of the rest of the situation. Back when I was working in the schools, I thought, you know, I've been here working for a lot of years and I've never dealt with a kid who wanted to be a mortician. I don't think I want to retire until I have at least one mortician who comes through the classes. I didn't really say that, but that sounds like kind of a silly, bucket list. Sure enough, one year I got a kid coming in from the ninth grade, and from that time, Jeremy knew that he wanted to be a mortician, or for you elderly folks, an undertaker. And he took all the right classes, good kid, a good student, and he went off to college. And he graduated in college, and he did well. He got through in 4 years and did the things that he was supposed to do. And after that, he signed up for a program in a mortuary science. That means an undertaker program. And he came back to visit. And I'm asking him, Jeremy, when you were in high school here, and you were taking chemistry and biology and anatomy, how well did we prepare you to get you ready for this? And he said, well, that part was the easy part. I was prepared pretty well for that. But he said, when I started doing my internship, it never occurred to me that so much of this work is relational and it's emotional. And he started telling me story after story after story of people coming in to the funeral home. Perhaps the deceased had only been there for less than 24 hours. And there was fighting, and there's wrangling. And he said sometimes the voices got so loud and so angry that the owner had to come in and try to broker the peace. And there were threats of lawsuits. And he said, the more I stood by and listened and watched at this part of the work, the more I realized they were arguing about stuff that had happened years before. Way back when, if they had understood, the season for reconciliation could have taken place. But now it's way too late. And families were split. And he mentioned one where walked out the door saying, I'm never going to talk to those people again. God cares intensely about the seasons of our personal relationships. 7 of the 10 commandments all have to do with relationships. You couldn't keep them if you were a hermit. Thou shalt not steal makes no sense unless you got a neighbor to steal from. Thou shalt not lie or bear false witness. That doesn't work unless there's somebody to lie and bear false witness about. Let me tell you, in my own words, a paraphrase, and you'll recognize right away which parable Jesus is talking about. I'm not going to change the meaning of it. I just want to make it modern. But back in the book of Luke, the 17th chapter, Jesus begins to tell a story, and he says, once upon a time, he didn't start it that way, but one time, there was a rich man. He didn't have a name, so I'm going to call him Rich Man. And he had not only a lot of money, but he had all the things that money could buy. He had a nice house. Jesus said he wore purple, which in those days meant he had great clothes. Nowadays, we would have to say that his sandals were made by Gucci, and he bought his robes at Saks Fifth Avenue in downtown Jerusalem. And he had status in the community. I mean, this guy had it all. He was a mover and a shaker. The King James, and I love this phrase, says, and he fared sumptuously. If there's a better word than waft, it's sumptuous. It means that every day he and his family ate the very best of food. The kind of food that we associate with a very special event, that's what he had morning, noon, and night. 20 yards outside of the front gates of his estate, there was a guy named Lazarus, and everything that I've said about the rich man, turn it 180 degrees for Lazarus. He's what we would call a street person. He had no money. His health was terrible. He couldn't work. He apparently had no friends and no family to take care of him. He got by on begging, and the Bible says that he would gladly have lived off the crumbs that fell from the rich man's table, which is where I think they invented the trickle-down theory of economics. One day, Lazarus died. And shortly thereafter, the rich man died too, which goes back to what our friend in Ecclesiastes is saying. There's a season to be born, and there's a season to die. It comes to all of us. And they're both buried in the cemetery. They're both 6 feet under, and it doesn't matter how big the stone is anymore, does it? You see where I'm going with this now. Because Jesus' next part of the story is that the rich man is in a place of torment. And he can see across the chasm that Lazarus is in heaven. The King James would say the bosom of Abraham, but that's just an old-fashioned way of saying it. And he cries out to the angel who's in charge. He said, would you send somebody over here with a drink of water? He says, because I thirst. And the voice from heaven says, now, the expiration date for free cold drinks has long since passed for you. There's an expiration date for everything. And then the rich man says, well, if that can't be, I want you to send Lazarus back to my brothers. I got 5 brothers. And I want you to warn them about this place. Now, I want to stop the story there. In Bible times, it was very common, particularly for the well-to-do, to, on almost a weekly basis, have a meal for the family. You can go way back to Job and see this. Here's a man who had tremendous amount of wealth. All of his brothers lived in town because nobody went off and lived in California or Oregon or whatever. In those days, they all lived in that area. And so he invited his brothers week after month after year at the end of the week to just sit back and eat some really good food and have conversation. What did they talk about? What do you talk about? Yet all that time, my guess is that maybe sometimes they talked about NASDAQ. Or maybe they speculated what the Jerusalem Tigers were going to do this year in the competition. Or maybe they speculated about how the crops would be or some new exciting vacation spot. How is it that we can sometimes do the small talk so long and we never have time to get around to talk about the more important things? Never once did they become introspective and say, you know, this lifestyle that we're living, I wonder what it's going to lead to. What we're hearing down there at the temple, are we living the way that the temple describes God wants us to live? And now it's too late for him to bring that up to his brothers. So, with all of these seasons, with all of these window periods, with all these periods of time when there's going to be an end point after which you can't have any influence anymore, what season are we in? And I'm asking that now, you know, personally for each of us to take a look at. Is there something that I'm in the middle of a season, but I don't have forever and I need to take care of it? Maybe it's teaching children while they're still teachable. Maybe it's saying I'm sorry to somebody when there's still time to make amends. Maybe it's getting into God's Word in a deeper level or developing some kind of a more extended prayer life. And I know that I've moved along to more and more and more serious, but not all of the seasons are like that. I want to close with this. Those story, it happened last year here at this church. Our daughter Marisha was getting ready to go out to Virginia. She just signed a teaching contract. And one of the things that she did one night during the week was to come to the church for the last meeting of the Outreach and Missions Committee, which was a big deal for her. She was a member of that. And to submit her resignation, say, I'm going out other places. And when she came home, she had this big smile on her face, but she also had tears in her eyes. You know, the good kind of tears. What's going on? She said, and I won't name the person, but one of the people that she had worked with made me cry by saying some really nice things, some compliments. Now, the person who did that probably had no way of knowing that that was exactly the right time for her to hear that. That was a real pick-me-up. Sometimes it's not always the heavy duty, but the season is now. Not later. I promised I guess it was Steve, maybe it was Elder, somebody, that I would not inflict music on you. So you know when Turn, Turn, Turn was sung, we turned to three professional politicians who've been well paid for their efforts. But I want to read you just a little quatrain from another popular song, and I'm going to close with this, which is my clumsy way of giving a cue to Jennifer that I'm just about done. It's from a song called Taking Care of Business by Bachman Turner Overdrive a few years back, and it goes like this. And I'll be taking care of business every day, taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business, it's all mine, taking care of business and working overtime. Is this a season for us to be taking care of business, relational business, or whatever it might be? Because the Bible teaches us that there's a season, and beyond that, it doesn't work so well, or maybe it can't be done at all. And I know that I'm a great hand to write myself a little list for the mundane stuff. Buy this, go pay that, mow the yard. But there's some heavier duty things sometimes that we just think, well, tomorrow and the next day, and it sort of gets away from us. And then the season has passed, and it's too late to plant begonias. Let's stand and worship.
We do invite you to stand.